I'm Greg Corumbus, reporting for Radio America. I'm joined once again by Matt Kibbe. He's the president and CEO at FreedomWorks. He is the author of several books, most recently, Don't Hurt People and Don't Take Their Stuff, A Libertarian Manifesto. We've already gone over some of the key principles about what an ordered liberty looks like in America and Matt's 12-step program to get back to that point that our founders intended. Now we'll take a look at some of the thorny issues that could potentially prevent America from getting back to where Matt and many other folks on the right would like to see it go. And Matt, thanks again for your time.
It's good to be with you.
You bring up a couple of points in the book that I think a lot of people have felt over time, but you delve into them in a deeper way, and I'd love to have you comment on them one at a time here. The first of which is that complexity is the best friend of the establishment. In other words, the more complicated you make a tax code or some other policy, the harder it is to unravel it. And we can potentially see that not only with the tax code, but efforts now to repeal Obamacare if Republicans are ever in a position to do that. Talk about how complexity in many cases is intentional and how it's so hard to roll back.
You know, philosophically, we believe in the rule of law, that the rules for liberty are equally applied. They're simple, and that's what makes them so enforceable. Everybody knows that everybody's treating fairly the same as everybody else. When it comes to empowering bureaucrats and empowering the executive branch with all of this discretionary authority, the other piece of that is the complexity of the laws that we pass. And you see this with Obamacare. You see it with the IRS and the very complex campaign finance rules that Lois Lerner used to target mom and pop Tea Partiers. It wasn't equally applied. And in this world of complexity, all of us are probably breaking some small piece of the Federal Register that we don't even know. We don't even know that rule exists. And that shifts power away from us to them. It also happens to benefit all of the interests that come to Washington looking for a special deal. Incumbent firms love to lobby for more complexity in finance regulations, in the ability of new firms to enter the marketplace, because it crowds out their competition. It's an incumbency protection program, both on the corporate side and on the political side.
The common phrase here when it comes to reforms in Washington, Matt, is we don't want to use a hatchet, we want to use a scalpel. In your estimation, which is the better way to go about making these changes? Are some of these things so complicated that you really can't dynamite them all at once, or is that exactly what we need to do in many cases?
Well, I think, you know, the problem is that government is not smart. The process by which we got into this incredibly big and complex behemoth in Washington is not something that you're going to be able to unwind in a rational way. It's sort of like earmarks. Everybody has a different opinion about which targeted spending for which favored constituencies is rational and which isn't. I think it'd be better on the spending side, agree to how much we're going to spend and then put everything on the table. On the regulatory side, I think it makes sense on really bad ideas like Obamacare, like Sarbanes-Oxley. A lot of these failed, super complicated regulatory regimes, pull it up by the roots, agree what you're trying to accomplish, and then set out something that's simple. There are simple solutions to healthcare that give patients more control that would actually create competition for scarce dollars. We don't have to write a 7,000-page bill. We could do it with some simple changes to the tax code. But that takes away Washington's power, and that's why it doesn't happen.
Another concept you talk about, Matt, is a lot of people, and it certainly happened to some extent in the Bush administration, about not necessarily being cozy with the policies, but deciding they're okay because you like the people who happen to be implementing or enforcing them at the moment. I remember a former host of ours in the wake of 9/11 being skittish about the Patriot Act, but because it was the Bush administration and not the Clinton administration, and John Ashcroft was attorney general at the time, then he was okay with it. And I remember being a little bit skeptical of that. How pervasive is that attitude?
Well, that's certainly the old way of doing things. And I remember how few people, even in the free market community, were willing to oppose George W. Bush on the Wall Street bailout. And a lot of it was party loyalty. A lot of it was friendships. A lot of it was the intertwining of the interests in Washington that really wanted to see it happen. I think that's changing. And I think you see on the national level a lot of voters leaving the partisan two-party system. They're no longer Republicans or Democrats, a lot more registering as independents. I don't think that's because they don't care. I think it's because they actually care about policies and not relationships, not partisan affiliation. The decentralization of information online and the ability for moms in Florida to organize bigger Facebook pages than county GOPs, that tells me that this dependence on personality, like I hate Congress, but I like my guy, that's going away. That's disappearing, because you can't be one person back home and another person in Washington, D.C., the way that a lot of Republicans and Democrats have tried to play it for years, because now you can Google it.
Matt, do you feel like there is a majority coalition here, whether it's some folks who are still in the GOP, others frustrated conservatives, others big L libertarians, and then there's this whole growing swath of independents who are independent for a whole variety of reasons? Can you gauge whether your side has getting close to that 50 plus one point?
I do think that Republicans win when they stand for something. And people forget this now, but Ronald Reagan in 1975 said that the heart and soul of conservatism is libertarian. The next year, remember, he primaried a sitting Republican president. Everyone predicted that he would destroy the party. In fact, the opposite happened. He kind of cleaned out the barn and restored a certain sense of standing for something within the GOP. I think that has to happen again today. And I think there are a lot of independents. There's Democrats with buyer's remorse. And there's a lot of smaller libertarians that would vote against the big government party, the Democrats, if they found a home. Some entrepreneur, some political entrepreneur needs to offer that up. But I think we're going to have to beat the Republicans before we beat the Democrats.
One of the biggest fights on the right, perhaps, on this list is about where you believe America's role should be on the world stage. Some say we've clearly overspent ourselves, outstretched ourselves. We're just coming out of two wars, and so our interaction in some of these major confrontations on the world stage should be pretty limited. Others say, look, this administration's kind of already taken that approach. When we're not in the leadership role, things tend to fall apart because not only of our great military strength, but also of our moral clarity, historically speaking. So how do you resolve that debate, which is pretty intense in the party right now?
It is, and I think Barack Obama is a great example of what you don't do, because he's combined a lack of leadership with a weakening of our economy, a running up of our debt. General Mullins, I quote him in my book, arguing that the greatest threat to national security is our national debt. I'm with Reagan on this. I lean libertarian. I think we should be careful about getting involved in things like Syrian civil wars, because it doesn't make sense, and the practical outcomes matter a lot, and we don't have a good track record there. But if we don't have the money and we don't have an economy that exports freedom and actually produces energy, which is the biggest issue, I think, in the dispute between Putin and a lot of the former satellite countries, we're not going to be anybody's world leader. And you can talk a good game, but I think the fundamentals are more important. Everybody took Ronald Reagan seriously, and it wasn't because he was rolling the tanks. It's because he represented a country that said what it believed and actually was strong in the face of Soviet oppression.
There's traditionally three legs to that conservative stool. There's the economic side, the foreign policy side, national security, and then there's the social value side. And that's another area where it seems that the right is getting more and more divided. On the one hand, you have those who say that staying strongly pro-life, defending traditional marriage, are losing issues ultimately because the younger generation is rising, and certainly on the marriage issue, that they're trending the opposite way. Others would say that, no, the government, even though maybe not in too many policies, still needs to champion things like traditional marriage, the intact nuclear family, because that's ultimately beneficial towards society. How do the two come together?
Well, I think actually libertarians have the answer for this, and I tackle this a little bit in my book. I think when we take our most important values and we ask Washington, D.C. to get involved, George W. Bush did this on faith-based charities, and essentially federalizing what had been a very robust volunteer community solving problems at the local level, that somehow evolved into a competitive scrum for earmarks, spending handouts from Washington, D.C. Well, the fact of the matter is the faith-based initiative is now controlled by Barack Obama and radical progressives. When you give Washington the authority to intervene in the really important things that you believe, expect that they might do exactly the opposite of what you want them to. Wouldn't it be better to pursue freedom, to allow you to raise your kids the way that, you think is right instead of imposing Common Core from the top down? Wouldn't it be better to not have Washington, D.C. opine on my marriage? I personally found it offensive that I had to get the government's permission to get married some 27 years ago. And I think people are waking up to this. These guys can't even balance the budget. Do we really think they can define marriage in a better way than we could for ourselves?
How do you then champion, without having elected leaders do it, what's best for the society by and large, and as history has suggested?
Well, that's what social institutions are for. That's what churches and synagogues are for. That's what communities working together in voluntary association. All of the good stuff in life comes from the bottom up. It doesn't come from Washington, D.C. And I think if you thought about that for a second, you would realize that's true. Washington corrupts everything it touches. And the political process is very different than the decision-making that we make in our own lives. In the case when you look in the mirror in the morning, you judge yourself. Did I do it? Did I get it done? Am I good? That is far more powerful than some rider in some piece of legislation crafted by some committee that you don't even know the name of.
Last topic, Matt, and I know it's a sensitive one for you. When you talk about confronting the establishment, FreedomWorks, this is not just a theoretical issue for you. You had to battle it within your own organization, and it's detailed to some extent in the book, and basically an armed takeover almost of the organization. What did you learn from that experience, and how did it shape perhaps more finely your perspective of what government should look like?
Well, I lost some friends in that fight, but I realized that the old loyalties to old friends within the GOP was more important to the people that we were fighting against. And we were pursuing a set of principles and a set of values that really aren't dependent on one person or my relationship with one person. I think we realized how important this fight is, but also how tough it's going to be. It's not going to be fun. And you talk to any activist that's got involved in one of these fights to upgrade a Republican from an incumbent for life or to take on the GOP establishment's favorites. I'm sure the same thing happens in the Democratic Party. The shareholders taking back control of the American enterprise is not going to be pretty. They're not going to give up power easily. But the fact that they're so panicked tells me now is the time to double down.
Matt, we'll leave it there. Thank you very much for your time, and best of luck with the book.
Thanks, Greg.
Matt Kibbe is the president and CEO at FreedomWorks. He is the author of several books, the most recent of which is Don't Hurt People and Don't Take Their Stuff, A Libertarian Manifesto. I'm Greg Corumbus, reporting for Radio America.